This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Daniel Lambert from Daniel Lambert Wines in Wales. How are you, mate?
Yeah, fine. It's actually a sunny day today in Wales, which that's a novelty in its own right.
Yeah, it's been quite snowy here up until recently anyway, but yeah. And Wales, you don't sound Welsh. Are you Welsh?
No. I was actually brought up in southwest London, and I actually am half French and half British.
Oh, okay. Francophone. Can you speak French or...?
Yeah.
Bilingual. Oh, cool. That's handy. That's always handy for an importer. Let's talk about what we're going to talk about. You're a wine importer. You're a wine merchant. Won numerous awards for the Loire from the IWC and all that sort of thing. But you import wines. And what I want to talk about today is a little bit about yourself, but also really looking at how your business was before Brexit and how things are changing a little bit with Brexit and possible implications of it. Just give us a quick sort of the 10,000 feet view of your business in Wales.
Okay, so we've been trading, as I say, since 92. We basically import currently from 11 wine producing nations globally. Most of America, Canada, the US, South Africa. Then we also do Australia and New Zealand. And then in Europe, we've got France, predominantly Portugal, Spain, Italy, Austria, and shortly Germany.
Oh, okay. So you're doing quite a number of different countries and dealing with non-EU countries as well. So
Yeah.
So the transition.
So we're a true agency. That's what we are. We're predominantly agency business, supplying wholesalers around the UK and then multiple chains and supermarkets. So we have customers in all the various sectors you would expect to find in the UK, from off-trade, on-trade, supermarkets, airlines, and we also do a little bit of export to the Caribbean.
Oh, okay, cool. I might touch on that because I'm trying to export some wines to Germany at the moment, and I'm having all sorts of fun with that one.
we've actually been able to export much faster than we've been able to import. So that's quite good. We're strictly business to business.
It's purely wholesale. Okay, no, that's cool. What were you doing before Brexit? That was basically your business model before Brexit, was it?
Yeah. So we are pre-COVID, pre-Brexit. We would supply up to 250 independent retailers around the UK as well as supermarkets, basically with wines coming from all natures of the planet, which would be for consumption on an off-trade basis. We had a little bit of on-trade, then COVID came along, and we had to change our business model then, where we couldn't actually do some of the fun stuff like the buyer's trips, which is obviously something that everybody loves doing. And we've been very much on a sort of monthly promotion to mitigate and increase sales over the COVID period, which was going fantastically well. We actually increased our sales by around about 400-500% in the COVID period. And then with Brexit approaching in September, we got Brexit ready with all the certification that we needed. And then Brexit itself actually happened. And then we realized that the systems that were put in place for everyone to use aren't fit for purpose. But what a lot of people probably didn't realise is that the chief system, which is, I think, quite famous now in the media generally, but the chief system...
That's literally the name, chief system, isn't it?
So the chief system has become very famous, but the poor old chief system, which was created in 1988, everybody's now realised is not fit for purpose and should be changed. But this was one of the points I've made before, that the government has pressed ahead regardless, knowing that Chief wasn't ready for what it was going to be asked to do. It was never designed to do what it's doing now. It was always designed just for third world import from, you know, America and Canada. It wasn't designed to take 100% of our imports and exports. But the government, I don't think, actually understand that point. I still think that they thought that they would get away with it. And as we can see, the wheels are falling off left, right and centre, not just in the wine industry, but fish, lamb, beef, cheese, you name it, whatever it happens to be, it ain't going well.
Yeah, although they have had the luck, not so much luck, but the COVID-19 has really taken people's attention away from the problems with importing and exporting.
So. Yeah, I think that they are using COVID as a bit of a blanket, if you like, to pretend that there isn't Brexit problems. There are really big fundamental problems with Brexit and how it's not working. And, you know, I don't want people to think, oh, well, he's a Remainer. No, this is not about Remain or Leave now. We've left. This is about the practicalities of using systems that are not fit for purpose. That's an important point.
Let's talk a wee bit about the process that you have to go through now to bring in wines from, say, France, and just highlight any of the major differences that you think might be important.
Okay, so previously it was very simple. You had the EMCS system, which was, and it was one documentation, which was electronic, obviously, and you were the producer that you were shipping it from would attach that to the stock. You could have as many of those documents as you liked on one consignment. And when you received them at the other end, you would literally just clear them. Rather than it being an import, it was a movement, something some people are not quite clear about, that the EU, now everything is an import, previously it wasn't, hence why there's more paperwork. So that was a very simple, really easy system to use. It was a fantastic system that the EU, including the UK contributions, had built over the last 20 years and got it to a state-of-the-art system, which obviously all of the remaining 27 countries will still be using. And frankly, it would be marvellous if we could have that system back, but we've now left the EU, so we're not allowed to access it, obviously. So now the process is quite convoluted. It's taken a lot of people by surprise, and it's not straightforward, and it's actually quite difficult to use. So the process for within the European Union remains the same. When we place an order, they have to create the EMCS document, which will get it to the exit point within the EU. And there are various exit points in the EU. For French wine coming to the UK, generally speaking, that's going to be the Calais-Dover route. But there are plenty of others. For example, Hillebrand are using from Belgium coming into Purfleet by train. They're using the Channel Tunnel, but not offloading in the Channel Tunnel. They're actually taking it all the way through to Purfleet, which is another destination. So to be able to use Chief, which is obviously quite famous, you have to have registered some time ago to get a badge. The badge is not free. You have to pay for that.
You would have had that already, though, for importing from Chile.
No. So badges is, again, something that people are not really familiar with. You have a number of different badges in the UK. You have deep sea badges, so Tilbury, Southampton, Felixstowe, Liverpool. Those would be deep sea badges. And they have a fee that you pay to be able to land stock in those ports. Then you have what's known as the RoRo badge. This is the badge that we applied for because this was the lion's share of what we were importing as a business. And that covers all the roll-on, roll-off ferry ports.
Yep.
So Fishguard, Rosslare, Dover, Plymouth, etc. All of the roll-on offer. And the Channel Tunnel, of course. And it actually also includes all the airports, bizarrely. We're not going to be using those. So that's what the badge is for. The badge costs £157 a month. And once you have your badge, there are four service providers that you can access Chief via. We've chosen, from the research we did, we chose to use access to Chief via a company called Destinate. And that's how we access Chief. Once you can access Chief and you've got your badge and you're paying a monthly fee, you're then capable or able to do your C88 declaration. So going back to the formula of bringing stock in. So the European producer will produce their EAD or their EMCS declaration, which gets it to Calais. Mm-hmm. Then the freight forwarding agent, not the producer in France, has to create what's called an EX1 document. The EX1 document is the document that takes the stock out of movement within the EU, and it shows that the EU community that stock has left the EU territory and is now an export. You then have the stock arriving in Dover, where you need your C88 Chief declaration to show UK customs that it's coming into the country. And then you have a number of declarations you can do. It depends how you're clearing it. If you're clearing it under bond, you would need to have a movement guarantee, and you would need to use the UK EMCS system. to be able to move it from Dover to the point that it's going to, the bonded warehouse.
Under bond, you're not paying the tax, so they need to know where it is and where it's going for customs and excise, because they're quite particular about that type of thing.
Yes, yeah. Hence why you need the movement guarantee, and you also have to create a movement on the EMCS system as a under bond movement. And to have a movement guarantee, obviously that's not the same as having a deferment account. You have to put another guarantee in place with the government to be able to move stock. So it's actually quite difficult to move stuff under bond in the UK because of this other bit of legislation, which again, the government doesn't need to have there, so long as you're going to get it back to your warehouse and sealed. So there is this added burden. We, generally speaking, will take stuff in bonded or duty paid because when we went through the protocols of what we wanted, we decided to get our own bonded warehouse. So we can receive stock both bonded and duty paid because of the fact we also export.
Yeah.
And because we export, obviously, we need to have it under bond for those particular circumstances. Mm-hmm. So there's many different ways, but in terms of the actual paperwork, it's increased by about three or fourfold.
So quite a lot more paperwork. But how does that compare to, say, bringing something in from Chile? Wouldn't it be very similar?
So no, with Chile, Chile's the example, but we don't actually do South America. We'll use California as an example. California comes in through Southampton, and the problems that there are currently with deep sea is that there's a shortage of boats prepared to come to the UK because of all the port problems. Now, all of the congestion that's currently being seen in Southampton, Felixstowe and Tilbury, which are the main ports for dock goods coming into the UK, have got about a 3 to 4 week docking time. And so, and are being delayed by about a month. So this is where it gets really quite complicated. Because of this, there are a number of shipping lines that no longer wish to come to the UK because they simply don't have the time to wait for a month out at sea waiting to get into those ports. So what they're actually doing is cargo that's due for the UK is actually being dropped in Le Havre and then is being cross-shipped from Le Havre over. Now, the problem with that is it has to be under bond, first of all, because otherwise you get involved in the problems that we've just described from the EU. So that's one problem, but of course that also incurs in further cost. So the costs that are being incurred on shipping from America that we're seeing, our shipping costs have actually doubled in the last 3 or 4 months. And this is not Brexit related, but it is COVID related.
That's still with all the containers in the wrong places and all that sort of thing.
Precisely that, yeah. The containers are in the wrong places because of the PPE that all came to Europe, and those containers need to be in other places. And the coronavirus problem in America, in the American continent, both north and south, is also causing a great deal of issues there. But in terms of the actual process with paperwork, there's actually less paperwork shipping from the deep sea points because you only need the C88 document, and you only need the export document and a VI1 from deep sea. But we'll touch on VI1s at the end because this is the big bone of contention that's going on in the industry right now.
Yeah,
huge
sure.
bone of contention. The other big point to make is that it's actually, you have time with shipping deep sea because deep sea is just that. It takes, you know, it can take up to 4 months to get a consignment from the US, California, back to the UK. 4 months. In 4 months, you have plenty of time to do your paperwork and have it pre-done so that as soon as the consignment arrives, you can literally just go to customs and say, yes, it's all pre-done. You don't have that luxury with trucks coming across the border every 5 minutes. You know, from France, the lead time used to be, isn't anymore, but it used to be 3 or 4 days. And so therein lies the problem, that when you have 4 months to prepare your paperwork, you're not going to be getting it ready in the last minute. You've got time to do it. But with France, those loads are coming in thick and fast. And so it's a very different way of working now. And the costs that are incurred are astronomical to where we were. Something I haven't touched on yet, the cost of a single pallet from France in December was £180.
That's everything. That was everything.
That was shipping. Everything, shipping, all in. Door to door, 180 quid, that was it. Now, you're talking 400 quid for exactly the same pallet because you have the declarations, which weren't there before. If you don't have access to Chief, you're having to get somebody to do those for you. You cannot do the EX1. The freight forwarder has to do that in France. No producer in France is able to do them. And obviously you have additional freight costs because a lot of the freight companies now are not doing the EU-UK link. The transport companies we were using previously, they're no longer providing that service at all. Yeah, they were worried about having their lorries stuck for days on end. I mean,
but I also heard lorries were going back empty. So instead of being pay for a job going in, pay for a job coming back, and the cost
exactly
is half.
Exactly that. So the costs that are being incurred ain't teething problems. This is something that's ongoing. This is something that's very much ongoing, and it will be ongoing for, well, the foreseeable, really, because these transport companies that a lot of importers were using who did groupage, the famous groupage, they weren't just grouping wine, they were grouping everything on their lorries. And the reason they don't want to do it is because it just takes one person to have one document wrong, and that lorry's stuck there for days whilst that paperwork's corrected. And this is the difference between deep sea and Europe. I was talking to somebody in the European government on Monday in a different broadcast, and they hit the nail on the head. Deep sea is deep sea because you have time to get your paperwork in order. You have up to 4 or 5 months to get your paperwork in order, and you know what you're bringing in. The UK is now being treated as if it's deep sea in terms of a paperwork aspect, and it's not a deep sea. It's not deep sea. So when you take that on board, you realise that the problems are just going to get worse and worse and worse. The backlogs are going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. This isn't teething problems. This is badly prepared government, didn't put the systems in place, and they're leaving business to basically fend for itself. And that's appalling because, you know, we appoint these people to look after us and do the best for us, and they're not doing that. They're not interested. All these industries are just being screwed by the government. And I think that's appalling.
I will say, in the government's defence, don't get me wrong, I'm not a particularly strong person on Brexit myself, but I've been involved in a lot of massive regulatory changes in the past. I was in the electricity industry, and I was involved in market starts. So you go from a monopoly almost to a free open market in electricity. And my experience was that the politicians took right up to the last minute to agree the rules. And you couldn't then implement the systems until you knew the rules.
Yeah.
You might get a glimmer of what the rules were, but you always knew if it was a 3 years to do a market start, the politicians would take two and three quarter years to agree the rules, and then you'd have a couple of months to implement those rules. And you're talking major software projects that would normally be span over years to get them right. And that's my experience with big projects, is that the politics and the negotiations are all about time. So they're always trying to use time as a way of getting a benefit.
A leverage. Yeah, it's a leverage.
Leverage. I mean, that is just the function of big structural change.
Completely agree with what you've just said there. And if you think about Brexit, this was the biggest fundamental change in the UK's trading pattern in 100 years, I would say. And the UK got 2 days to plan for it.
Yeah.
It's absolutely bonkers.
All right, Daniel, I think we're going to wrap it up there. I think next week we'll look at some of the ranging and pricing issues associated with Brexit. All right?
Okay, great.